We're in lesson number 48 in the book of 1 Samuel. We're in chapter number 23, about number verse 14. And as we ended up last week, I mentioned that that David and his men were all spread out and all that type of stuff, and also mentioned that they some of them were hidden in that hill country of Ziph. Now you have to say, where is Ziph? Well, I've taken the old map off. I've kind of blown it up bigger. I don't think I've ever drawn the Sea of Galilee this big on any whiteboard before. So I've kind of zoomed in is what we've done. Here's a mountain range that goes through here. By the way, this mountain range goes on up and catches this side of Jerusalem and Bethlehem. Here's Hebron. Right here below on the really other side of the top of the mountain range is Ziph. So they're in this area called the area of the country, hill country of Ziph. Here's Carmel. That is where Saul, when he had done the wrong thing with the Amalekite king and had him with him, that he built his little altar. This way going home to Gibeah instead of going through the trade route, going through Hebron. But be that as it may, here's where Ziph is. And I also told you last week at the end of the lesson that they were also in the hills of Hachalah. Here's Hachalah just on the edge of this hilly area on this western side of the Dead Sea. It also said it was south of Jesimoan. We don't know where Jesimoan is. And that's the reason why I said to you more on that later, because we just simply don't know. And that lesson, the time ran up on that lesson. And so I had to leave it there. But that is what is happening here. So David and his men, 600 about, plus their families, are now all hiding over here in this wilderness and hilly area right here on the western side of the Dead Sea. Saul is still up in Gibeah up here, and he's been on his pursuit, but he was thwarted in trying to catch Saul and David and his men in Keilah, and that stopped Saul's pursuit. However, the writer tells us, as we begin here in chapter number 23, verse number 14b, how Saul starts his pursuit of David again. Chapter 23, verse 14b. And Saul sought him every day, but God did not deliver him into his hands. Notice that God got involved in thwarting Saul's pursuit. God made sure that Saul failed in his desire. God is God, and David is going to be the next king. Well, Jonathan learned that David was at Horesh, and he came to him, and there David and Jonathan made a second covenant together. There also, David stayed with Jonathan at Horesh in David's house. Look at what Jonathan reveals to David in verse number 15. Now David became aware that Saul had come out to seek his life while David was in the wilderness of Ziph at Horesh. And Jonathan, Saul's son, arose and went to David at Horesh and encouraged him in God. Thus he said to him, "Do not be afraid, because the hand of Saul, my father, will not find you, and you will be king over Israel, and I will be next to you, and Saul, my father, knows that also." So the two of them made a covenant before the Lord, and David stayed at Horesh while Jonathan went to his house. The writer of this section tells us the end results before he tells us what led to the results. As such, Jonathan promises to continue to be knit to David even when David becomes king. Here, Jonathan reveals that Saul knows that David will be the next king. Jonathan also reveals that it is his intention to remain with David constantly, which means Jonathan will be in rebellion to his father. Well, the Ziphites are concerned, here in the town of Ziph and in the area, the Ziphites are concerned that David is in their location, and they tattletale to Saul. And with that, Saul learns of David's staying at Horesh. The writer of this passage may have switched between Gad or Nathan, because surely one was with David and the other was with Saul. And so we hear from the writer of Saul's response to the Ziphites, probably from Nathan. Then Ziphites came up to Saul at Gibeah, saying, "Is David not hiding with us in the strongholds of at Horesh, on the hill of Hachaliah, which is on the south of Jesmeon? Now then, O king, come down according to all the desire of your soul to do so, and our part shall be to surrender him into the king's hand." Saul said, "May you be blessed of the Lord, for you have had compassion on me. Now go, make more sure, and investigate and see his place, where his haunt is, and who has seen him there, for I am told that he is very cunning. So look and learn about all the hiding places where he hides himself, and return to me with certainty, and I will go with you. And if he is in the land, I will search him out among all the thousands of Judah." The Ziphites have given Saul a specific location for David. Yet in Saul's experience, he does not want to arrive with his army and be in the wrong location at the wrong place at the wrong time because David's cunning and he's moving around. Therefore, he sends the Ziphites back home and says, "You go make sure. And when you make sure and you find where he is, you come back and you tell me." Now, we will now hear how Saul pursues David in the wilderness and how Saul attempts to surround David. However, we will also learn that Saul was correct in his supposition, for David and his men had moved further south from the location reported to Saul. Verse number 24. Then they arose and went to Ziph before Saul. Now David and his men were in the wilderness of Maon in the Arabah, to the south of Jesmon. When Saul and his men went to seek him, they told David, and he came down to the rock and stayed in the wilderness of Maon. And when Saul heard it, he pursued David to the wilderness of Maon. Saul went on one side of the mountain, and David and his men were on the other side of the mountain, and David was hurrying to get away from Saul. For Saul and his men were surrounding David and his men to seize them. Okay, so we have this mountain range that comes on down. In fact, it continues on down. And in fact, on top of that, we have a place down here south of Carmel, Fasa Jemen. It's down in here, and it is called Maon, M-A-O-N. David is on the side of Maon on this side of the mountain. Saul is over here. So we've got David on this side with his men, and we've got Saul on this side with his men. And Saul is intent on surrounding David to catch him. Now, almost surrounded by King Saul, it seems that David might be caught off guard. But David has nothing to worry about, for the writer tells us that Saul is going to be distracted by the Philistines. Verse number 27. But a messenger came to Saul saying, "Hurry and come, for the Philistines have made a raid on the land." So Saul returned from pursuing David and went to meet the Philistines. Therefore, they called that place the Rock of Escape. You got it? The Philistines are coming in. Saul has no time to go oversee David. So Saul goes to the Philistines. Therefore, where David was right there, boom, right there, they have a rock and they're going to call it the Rock of Escape. My pen is running out. Escape. All right. That's going to be an important place. The Lord is never late, folks. He is never early. He is never late. He is always right on time. In fact, he is even on time when we don't even know that he needs to be on time. The only way for this story to evolve into this whole message is for Gad and Nathan to be one with Saul, one of them with Saul, and one of them with David. More than likely, Gad's with David, Nathan's traveling with Saul. It seems both of their chronicles have been combined to tell us the differing sides of this complex story between David and Saul. If it is Nathan, he is reporting the news of the Philistine raid in the land and Saul's decision to go over there. The place where Saul was camped on the left side, okay, is nicknamed here this Rock of Escape. Its translation in Hebrew, the Hebrew word is Selah Hammerakoth, and it is the name of the great gorge that lies between Hashaloth and Maon. See, there's Hashaloth. There's a gorge down here. All right. Southeast of Hebron. Boom, southeast of Hebron. That's where this rock of escape is. The gorge has a river running through it, and the gorge is large enough to hold the army of Saul and provide clean water. Now, with the departure of Saul, David escapes over to En-Gedi. Now, where is En-Gedi? En-Gedi is, boom, over here. En-Gedi. David escapes to En-Gedi, and following him there with the army of 3,000 men. Did you get that? Saul is following David to En-Gedi with 3,000 men after he comes back. David's escaped. Saul's gone to the Philistines. Now Saul comes back. He's got 3,000 men. Of course, we must know by now that David was recording psalms of worship in this time of his life. So here we have David with a little more music. Music from Psalm number 31. He's written it for the choir director, and he's reflecting back on what is going on right now in this story. A Psalm of David. O Lord, I have come to you for protection. Don't let me be disgraced. Save me, for you do what is right. Turn your ear to listen to me. Rescue me quickly. Be my rock of protection, a fortress where I will be safe. You are my rock and my fortress. For the honor of your name, lead me out of this danger. Pull me from the trap of my enemy. Set me free, for I find protection in you alone. I entrust my spirit into your hand. Rescue me, Lord, for you are a faithful God. I hate those who worship worthless idols. I trust in the Lord. I will be glad and rejoice in your unfailing love, for you have seen my troubles and you care about the anguish of my soul. You have not handed me over to my enemies, but have set me in a safe place. Have mercy on me, Lord, for I am in distress. Tears blur my eyes. My body and my soul are withering away. I am dying from grief. My years are shortened by sadness. Sin has drained my strength. I am wasting away from within. I am scorned by all my enemies and despised by my neighbors. Even my friends are afraid to come near me. When they see me on the streets, they run the other way. I am ignored as if I am dead, as if I were a broken pot. I have heard the many rumors about me, and I am surrounded by terrors. My enemies conspire against me and plotting to take my life, but I am trusting you, O Lord, saying, you are my God. My future is in your hands. Rescue me from those who hunt me down relentlessly. Let your favor shine on your servant. In your unfailing love, rescue me. Don't let me be disgraced. O Lord, for I call out to you for help. Let the wicked be disgraced. Let them lie in silence in the grave. Silence their lying lips. Those proud and arrogant lips that can accuse the godly. How great is the goodness you have stored up for those who fear you. You lavish it on those who come to you for protection, blessing them before the watching world. You hide them in the shelter of your presence, safe from those who conspire against them. You shelter them in your presence, far from accusing tongues. Praise the Lord, for he has shown me the wonders of his unfailing love. He kept me safe when my city was under attack. In panic, I cried out, I am cut off from the Lord, but you heard my cry for mercy and answered my call for help. Love the Lord, all you godly ones, for the Lord protects those who are loyal to him, but he harshly punishes the arrogant. So be strong and courageous, all you who put your hope in the Lord. David has another psalm, Psalm 54. For the choir director, a psalm of David regarding the time the Ziphites came and said to Saul, we know where David is hiding. To be accompanied by string instruments. Come with great power, O God, and rescue me. Defend me with your might. Listen to my prayer, O God. Pay attention to my plea. For strangers are attacking me. Violent people are trying to kill me. They care nothing for God. But God is my helper. The Lord keeps me alive. May the evil plans of my enemies be turned against them. Do as you promised and put an end to them. I will sacrifice a voluntary offering to you. I will praise your name, O Lord, for it is good. For you have rescued me from my troubles and helped me to triumph over my enemies. Chapter 23 is done. We come to chapter 24. We do not know how long it took Saul to run the Philistines out of the land. But the writer tells us that as soon as he was through, he returned in his attempt to kill David. David and his men had moved from Maon to En-Gedi on the western coast of the Dead Sea. There, the writer tells us that David spares Saul's life in En-Gedi. And we find that story beginning as David hides in a cave in chapter 24 in verse number 1. Now when Saul returned from pursuing the Philistines, he was told, saying, "Behold, David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi." Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men from all Israel and went to seek David and his men in front of the rock of the wild goats. He came to the sheep's fold on the way where there was a cave. Here in En-Gedi, there's a place where there's a cave, and there's a place where they call the rock of the wild goats. It's an enclosed area, by the way, where goats climb up on this hill. All right, now, as Saul returns from facing the Philistines to chasing David, Saul brings with him 3,000 men. David has about 600 men at the time. En-Gedi is a beautiful location, lush, green, with water for all. Solomon will extol the greatness of the vineyards of En-Gedi when he comes along in his Song of Songs. Song of Songs, Song of Solomon, chapter 1, verse 14. But, as in all mountain areas, there are also rough areas. Such was the rocks of the wild goats. Saul stationed his men in front of the rocks of the wild goats, not on the rocks of the wild goats. Wild goats are often seen in these rocky areas, climbing them mostly for safety from animals, from prey, and from people. And when the writer uses the word front, he is telling us that Saul stationed his men where they could see the going and the coming of anyone that might be hidden in the caves and the cracks of the rocks of the wild goats. The Hebrew word translated here means the surface or upon the surface. The word picture implies the ability to see to see what is on the surface of the rocks of the wild goat. They can see the goats, they can see the mountains, they see the rocks, they can see the airs, they can see the going and comings from any of the caves. On the way to the rock of the wild goats, Saul and his men passed by the sheepfolds. Now a sheepfold is an enclosed area where a flock of sheep can be protected. Now they don't have fences, gates, barbed wire, anything like that. But there are places in little valleys where they could get the sheep in there and guard them from one end of how they got into it. And because of the mountains area of En-Gedi, the sheepfold was more like an area of with at least three sides that may be part of the fourth that consists of natural rocks. Structures where the sheep would not get over it. And an entrance of some was there somewhere that allowed on this fourth side allowed for the sheep to get in and allowed for them to get in there and get to the water, the stream that went down there, and it had natural barriers around it. And so the conclusion all makes sense because in the sheepfold there was a cave. And a cave has to be in a raised mountain area, or it is in this case, which was part of the barriers making the fold to protect the animals of prey or restricting the sheep from wandering off. So passing by this sheep fold where the cave was located, Saul enters the cave. Verse number 3. And Saul went in to relieve himself. Now David and his men were sitting in the inner recesses of the cave. The men of David said to him, "Behold, this is the day which the Lord said to you, 'Behold, I am about to give your enemy into your hand, and you shall do to him as it seems good to you.'" Saul needed to relieve himself. Nature calls in the Bible. And the Bible tells us about it. And the men with David are ecstatic. David, this is the opportunity. For the first time we hear that Saul was like all humans and all animals for that case. Nature calls. It's not the first time the Bible has mentioned the call of nature. We've heard it first in Eglon when the king of Moab, whom Judge Ahab killed, and Eglon's men thought that he was relieving himself in the room and they did not bother him. The point I make here is this. If you ever think that the Lord has not covered or mentioned something in the Bible about life, you need to come and ask me. Think about it again, okay? Because everything is mentioned in the Bible. And you can testify that if you knew the content of the story of the Bible. Doing an electronic search may not bring you to the subject to mind, but reading the context of the stories will. And in searching for this subject, who would have ever thought of using the word relieve? But I'll tell you this. God has already answered every answer that needs to be answered to every cult, every false theology, every false God, and how people live in the Bible. It's already there, be that as it may. In Saul's current state with nature calling, he stumbled into the hidden location of David and 600 men and possibly their families too. Set the scene in your mind. Saul, alone, enters a cave where 600 men are waiting with David. And what do the 600 men think? They think the Lord has brought Saul into the cave alone so that David can kill him and end the conflict because of Saul. When we see words like this, the Lord said, we always need to look at who's talking, folks. Who's talking? Is the Lord actually talking here, or is someone else trying to say something for the Lord and the Lord has not said it? The latter's the case. The Lord did not say to David, behold, I am about to give your enemy into your hand, and you shall do to him as seems good to you. Those words came from the mouths of the minds of David's men. So therefore, we can't drop our finger on a passage and say, I need the answer from the Lord, because that one you would have gotten would come out of the mouths of men and not out of the mouths of men. Time after time, I have heard preachers say, such and such word is found this many times in the Bible. Well, so what? So what? What point does that make of truth? Preachers do this to try to build a solid, overwhelming foundation to the point that they want to make. Me, knowing the scripture, hang my head, shake my head and think, how foolish, every time I hear it done. Let me chase a rabbit for a moment. That will clearly prove my point. In the English version of the New Testament, the word church is used 112 times. But the Greek word that is translated church is ekklesia. Ekklesia means the assembly. Now, in the Greek Septuagint translation of the Old Testament, where there's no church in the Old Testament, the word ekklesia is used every time as an assembly of some group of people being mentioned. Now, in the New Testament, as I said, the word ekklesia is actually found 115 times, but 112 times, as I mentioned a while ago, it is translated church. Properly, all 115 times, it should have been translated assembly. And what's the deal, you might say? Well, the deal is that our Bible translators have read into the scripture and made the decision that, and made the distinction for us and the decision to translate it, and instead of using the word assembly, they have used the word church. And they've made this distinction between the assembly of the believers who belong to the Lord and the believers of the assembly of the Jews over in the synagogue. So both are perfectly proper for the word assembly, but the translators want you to know the context of the passage is the assembly of believers. And so 112 times they use the word church for that. Now that would be all well and good except for one important point. The Greek word for church is in the Bible, and it's in there twice. And it's not included in the 112 times the word church is done. It's not used. The Greek word for church is kyriak. In the Greek, it came from kyriach in German, which comes from kyrija in Old Norse, which comes to kyries in Old Saxon. And in Old English, it's kirch. And in Middle English, it's church. So the word is there. With all the etymology for the Greek word kyriach, it is only found two times in the New Testament. Here are those times. Therefore, when you meet together, is it not to eat the Lord's, that's the word kyriach's, supper? 1 Corinthians 11:20. Second time, it's in the book of Revelation 1:10. I was with the Spirit in the Lord's, kyriach, day. And I heard behind me a loud voice. The Greek word that became the word church is kyriach, and it means the Lord's. The implication is the things that belong to the Lord. In the New Testament, two specific things are said to belong to the Lord, His supper and His day. The New Testament does not use the original word for church when speaking of believers. Nevertheless, we belong to the Lord and we are His, but the word church is not used in association with believers. Therefore, the translators have superimposed the idea of those who belong to the word. They've grabbed the word church, which really applies to the word assembly, and have applied it 112 times where the word assembly should have been the proper translation. It is their good intentions to define for us in the context of each passage those who belong to the church and those who belong to the Jews.